Ontario to do advertising. And you can kind of do what you want. And some people do a postcard. And I wanted to do a poster. I wanted to do a poster because I didn't really care that much about the advertising of the show. I more wanted to have an object that people could take with them. Mm-hmm. So with that budget, I could make, I don't know, I think it was 3,000 posters. And then 1,500 of them got postered around the city. And I wanted it to be a kind of like a viral title, like play with this idea of, like when I started doing stuff with Deep Les, it really was meant to be this viral thing, and it became this viral thing where it spread. Mm-hmm. So I just thought about what time does the labia close comes from when I was in university as an undergrad, and people, I'd like gross dudes as a joke saying, what time does the labia close about the library, right?
Oh.
Labia, library.
I would have totally, I would have never guessed.
That's okay.
That's so funny.
And so I thought, you know, this is I've created this library, and it's a way of kind of, that, you know, when people say gross, weird, kind of slightly dirty, I don't know, hearing somebody say labia, it's so gynecological and biological, but it's not a word that you hear very often. Like, you hear vagina all the time.
So we're going to stop the interview there. That very interesting point, but I mean, it was all interesting. And we're going to pick it up next week at 10 a.m. Please be sure to tune in. This has been These Things That People Make. And I'm going to give you two websites to check out. So go to Alison Mitchell's website, which is Alison Mitchell, A-L-L-Y-S-O-N, Mitchell, MITCHELL.com. And check out all the work she's done. Incredibly prolific, not surprisingly to me, but just like, it's amazing. So much stuff, so much exciting stuff. And then also check out my blog, thesethingsthatpeoplemake.blogspot.com. If you want to listen to the interview again, there'll be a link that you can paste into your browser to Radio for All to listen to the interview as many times as you want. And please do be sure to drop me a line if you have any questions, if you want any copies of past shows, sarah.mangle@gmail.com. Have a fabulous week, and Locavore is up next.
Its purpose is to provide a place where students who are in the academic area can come and actually have hands-on experience, so that not alongside of their theoretical knowledge that they're gaining, they will have a place where they can actually have practical experience. When they get a job, they've actually learned how to grow food, if that's their interest. So it was started, Ann Clark and a number of others on campus had decided that they wanted a farm, and a little organic farm on campus, and that's what we proceeded to do. So we found a piece of land. The university was ever so generous in allowing us to use the northwest corner of the Arboretum, alongside with working with the Arboretum, which was important. We have a good relationship with them, and we're linking ideas of what we're doing with heritage foods with what the native base of planting is at the Arboretum, so there's some nice connections to be furthered. So it was created 2 years ago, and it has run as an experimental, not even experimental, it's probably the wrong word, a trial garden, essentially, to see what will grow, to see how we can, in fact, move 2.5 acres into some urban food production that makes some sense for the campus. Okay. So we can begin to feed the people that are in this community.
Okay, so the logistically, and I know because I've been there a number of times this year, you can sell to students on site of the campus. Mm-hmm. And is there anybody else you provide food for that's growing?
The daycare has been purchasing some food over the last 2 years. However, our lack of infrastructure to have food washed and prepared hasn't allowed them to purchase maybe as much as they would like to. And they're little eaters, so it doesn't require a lot of food.
Right.
So we're actually having a market tomorrow, Thursday, from 11 till 5 at Branyan Plaza.
Okay. So that'll be good. That'll be the last market of the year?
Thanksgiving market, okay. Yes. And then the food that remains on site, volunteers come and work for food. It's not a lot of food that goes out, but Everybody knows that if they come to participate, they're able to take home lots of seconds.
Right.
Lots of rodent and large animal damage.
Okay. So. Tomorrow, typically, it's the last market of the year. What will be for sale?
Well, the list is rather extensive as we get it organized for tomorrow. There's probably 30 different crops will be available tomorrow. So lots of different squash, pie pumpkins, beets, carrots, potatoes, onions, kohlrabi, celery, kale, chard, greenhouse tomatoes, last picking, and peppers, lots of herbs. So it'll be a cross-section of what we have. We planned this year to plant a little bit later so we would actually have more food in the fall as opposed to in the summer. So when the campus comes back to life in September, there's more activity.
Okay.
And I think that's, you know, part of the planning of the project. Keep piquing their interest in what we're doing, and they can come in and volunteer and be a part of the project that way.
Okay.
You know, we hired 2 students from the organic major this year.
Okay.
We are looking to increase sort of a couple of URA positions or / intern positions for next year, and we're in the planning process as we go on. There are many curriculums within the faculty. We have an arts course they're doing community volunteer work, learning about sustainability in the written language, but they're getting hands-on experience. So they're in. The amount of hours that we're having right now from other faculty is quite substantial.
With respect to your role at the GCOF, how did you become involved, and what specific responsibilities do you have?
Well, technically, I'm the project coordinator for the site. I started it probably 4 years ago. We started the planning process, of which I, volunteered 2 years of my time to get it going. And then I have been working for 2 years on the project, and it's just coordinating volunteers and building the infrastructure of the site, essentially liaising between the campus community and the farm community, which is not just the campus community. It also includes a lot of outreach to the community. So there's been coordination.
Okay. And before that, what were you doing that enabled you to become involved with the project in the first place?
Larger scale community food programs, projects all across the country.
Okay.
Co-op development, increasing farmers' production, getting more food grown, matching it to markets in a way that we can start to look at a year-round, food security, and I will use the word sovereignty in that, because I think we have a right to choose what we eat if we work hard. If we don't work hard, It will vanish.
So there's a responsibility besides a right that comes with that.
Absolutely.
You say. At the open house, I noticed that there were a number of restaurants, and of course the School of Hospitality and Tourism was also a participant.
Mm-hmm.
Do they get food from you at all for their program?
Not yet.
Okay, that was just one time.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, they agreed to participate, which I thought was terrific. I think if the 2.5 acres are in high production, intensive organic production, we have the potential to facilitate growing enough food to make a little bit of an impact. At least it could be designated sort of contractual food that hospitality or the Bull Ring or any of the other food services on campus know that they'd be able to use throughout the fall.
Okay.
Predominantly the fall.
I know that the Bull Ring has now initiated this, I guess, by Ontario and Ontario-grown program. At least they're trying to promote that. They haven't been a client then?
Actually, last year they were.
Last year,
Katrina bought food throughout the summer, which was wonderful for us to be able to have, just sort of small amounts going out. We're not in a production stage yet. We're not running a commercial farm. We're building a center its core is about teaching farming, about giving workshops, about having, large groups, classes coming in. That's what our focus is, and we need to stay focused to that, because I think that's the great potential that it has. Not only to the community of Guelph, the university community, but its potential to link the university to the outside community. the local community of Guelph. So it's open. There's two doors open here. Mm-hmm. So the school board, we've had incredible success bringing lots of different ages of school children through. That I think we've been making some impacts there. Grade fours.
Right.
You know, the daycare that's been down. The daycare has been the Child Care and Learning Center from the university here. They've been on site for 2 years now. Those kids think the garden's theirs. It's quite lovely. They're learning about where food comes from.
So why grade four?
It just happens to be that there was a science teacher or a grade four teacher that really liked the idea. And through the work of Bruce McAdams at Hospitality and Tourism, we developed the Garden to Table program, and that linked us into a grade four class, which is, I don't know what their reason was, but it's a good group of children to be teaching. They have some science knowledge, and it really is a science knowledge. Farming is a science. You have to understand, you know, basic biology and all of those things to be able to grow food.
So you mentioned the school board is interested and has been supportive of this. Do you think other grades have, other students have shown an interest?
There's been grade 12s. We probably had this season alone at least 20 different school groups through in some form or fashion. I've had grade 12 co-op students from the local high school or the downtown high school. There are all kinds of community groups have come through, so it's being built to be able to accommodate more and more. Though it has to be a cost recovery, and we're not there. So the university, you know, OAC's been backing this project, and at some point in the near future, we have to make it sustainable. If we want to, you know, I believe that any business that we take on should be somewhat sustainable, and it's not connected to the core curriculum. So, and you know, I don't understand how all those processes work within this university, but it's outside of the base, I suppose. Majority of volunteers, see the volunteers, it's also about teaching because they're coming down to learn how to grow food. And they're from all faculties. I think environmental science and environmental, I know, biology, international development, in lots of engineering students. So the students are coming in from all areas, which I find quite exciting. I like, it's not just the major students, organic major.
Okay. So diversity of student involvement.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned, I guess, there's certainly challenges with running this and trying to find your way because this is really 2 years old and the path to the future is not necessarily mapped out clearly, although you certainly have some goals. Yep. What are the challenges right now that you face with respect to the operation of the farm?
Well, I mean, to me, and I'm going to be really selfish about this, the lack of place to work there is really makes it very difficult. We right now all kinds of food that's all covered over, and some of it has to be insulated a little bit, and some of it cooled off. We don't have the infrastructure there to actually have a classroom, a place to store food, to dry food, to save seeds. As you can see, this office is full of wet drying seeds.
Right.
It's important. Seed saving is a major drive in what we're doing at the farm. I'd like it to become a sustainable farm, and in that, in my mind, it's about also the input of seed.
Right.
And the stronger we grow as a plant, the stronger, you know, the likelihood of seed survival is greater. So we need a place to work from down there.
And now, is that in the works?
Not really.
No.
I need to write. Whoever can help,
right?
We have a program to be able to build something. But we have to know how to keep the project going from year to year without drying up the pockets local. So do we go after funding? Do we go after one funding source that might help supply the infrastructure? I mean, the organic sector is very underfunded across the board in every sector of the system of food, pretty much. So we're on our own on that.
And that's, so you think that is right now the biggest challenge you face is that infrastructure that you don't have, that if you did have, you would be able to save seed.
We could run workshops in the wintertime. We have a greenhouse, but the greenhouse isn't, you know, you can't bring a group of 25 people in there. You want to be able to be growing food in there. You want to maximize our space. So, you know, we're, what's important to remember, we're doing this project virtually without water and without oil. So we have no machinery whatsoever. So we're running it by hand. Right. We made some money from the open house market, and I promptly turned around and went and bought some new hand tools. And everybody was so happy.
Right.
So we have, you know, we've set some challenges ourselves. The students are very excited about the idea of growing on, you know, 2.5 acres is a fairly large-scale garden.
For intensive horticulture, yes, for
yes.
sure.
And how can we do that without machinery? It's quite interesting. How do we cover crop? How do we incorporate green manures without machinery? What tools are required? So we've set up a just building a philosophy about what the future of agriculture looks like. I mean, these are the kinds of discussions that we have when we're working. How can we keep doing this? How do we maintain soil fertility? How do we not burn people out? Because we all know that growing food is extremely hard work. It's physically, there are days where I'm not sure. There are days where I have to stop on the side of the road and have a nap on the way home. I'm so tired.
Yeah.
So that's not going to sustain agriculture in the long or the growing of food in the long term if we can't figure out how. So we've set ourselves a big challenge to do post-oil, unquestionably.
Right.
Whether we end up with a small tractor for cover cropping, that would be okay too.
Well, there's so many offshoots of what you're talking about, potential research possibilities, and I think it's great and fortuitous that the university actually has this, and I'm not even sure they realize all the future potential research that could accrue from mm-hmm. having the farm on site. Mm-hmm. So it was a good decision to actually incorporate it, because definitely from the open house you can see how it was very important, I think, in community building and liaising mm-hmm. with people, mm-hmm. both in various departments in the university, students, faculty, staff, but also communications and people outside the university as well in the Guelph area and beyond the Guelph area actually mm-hmm. as well. Are there any other campuses post-secondary in Canada that have something?
Trent has a garden that's been supplying their kitchen for a number of years, so they have a really sweet little project. It's small scale, but it's working. So there's a connection at least to when you go to the cafeteria. To their cafe, it's all from the garden.
Right.
So that's a strong commitment from the university to be able to, you know, support that.
Right.
Other than that, I think there are some small little pockets that are starting to evolve. You know, schoolyards can have gardens. There's so much opportunity, but I think at the scale that the amount of people that are coming through. I haven't added up the volunteer hours this year, but last year there were 4,000 volunteer hours from students.
Right.
Mostly students. Some of that's community members as well.
Right.
That's a lot.
That's a lot to manage, too, because you've got a diversity of people coming in, different people.
Everybody
have to
has to learn the rules and regs, because there's a huge protocol. And I'm going to make public this complaint as far as a challenge. After the open house, it seemed that a lot of people started to think it was theirs, and were, you know, we've had people in the greenhouse harvesting tomatoes with dogs on the weekend, and people just classes coming down, not I have no idea where they come from, and it's not fenced,
right?
Which it needs to be fenced at some point in the future. If we're going to save seed, I don't want dogs traipsing through my tomatoes.
Right.
It's the last thing you need.
Yeah.
Right? So that's
8-foot high deer fencing or something like that.
That's a challenge indeed. Yeah. We're installing a solar system is being installed starting next Friday. So we will be off the grid with some energy, which will be fantastic. So we found a few sponsors and to put that together. So that's what I need to spend time doing that.
Okay.
I don't know. I'm not sure. I may have to wait till December. But I think that if we can amass a group again, as Anne did in the beginning of getting this going, there were a large group of faculty. I think we need another large group of group of faculty again from different areas, plant pathology or whatever, food sciences even. We've had there because the links are so strong, and we're seeing the linkage. It's not going to go away.
Yeah. Well, I'm thinking about volunteer hours and the fact that that's, one respect, it's a great thing, but another respect, it's not necessarily sustainable in the long run. It's great as a teaching tool, mm-hmm. but as far as making something operational, if it does grow, it's not a sustainable concept, yeah. and it's a very difficult thing. Yeah. And that's, you know, I wonder about, you know, cost recoveries. You say you've got some money from the open house, which helped. You bought hand tools.
Yeah, but that's nowhere near the kind of money that's needed to,
right.
you know, to keep this ongoing and to build the outreach, whether, you know, it is within or without or from without or on the outside of the campus. It's, you know, if it's to become a teaching center for community and campus, then it's maybe the scale of the gardens, in fact, narrow and become quite small, and they really are just teaching beds, a small bed of this, and you're not really feeding anybody, right. which I think is a bit of a missed opportunity. I think it's really exciting to be able to grow the maximum amount of food on a nice piece of property,
right.
and be able to feed as many people as we can. So we don't know how that will unfold. So we're in the end of year two. We've had, you know, really, they've been both pilot years, one and two. The first year was, last year was very rough.
Yeah.
This year, partially, we kept it, we on purpose kept it quiet because we weren't ready for people.
Yeah.
You can't wash your hands.
Right.
You know, this isn't conducive to be, you know, a safe place to be
right.
working.
But next year you will have water, do you think?
Well, we need next year. I mean, if we keep, you know, one step at a time,
right.
We'll have, you know, a running sink with washing facilities for vegetables and mechanisms in place to, you know, get the food from there to the campus. And, you know, it really depends on the planning this winter and who becomes involved. I mean, you know, I'd like the students to have more involvement in the actual running and like the operation of the farm. From A to B, from right through, from the ordering of seeds to the plant, you know, from the planting, the seed production, the transplanting, the planting, the rotation. That I really would like them to start to take that over.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to see a course devoted to that. That's where I like to teach. That's where I can teach what I know, yeah. when I'm in the field.
I mean, we have the food science building here, we have the food technology center here, we have the School of Hospitality and Tourism. I had this very interesting, was it watermelon and what was the other ingredient in the ice cream?
Mm. It was watermelon ice cream.
Watermelon, yeah. But it was from ingredients from the
mm-hmm.
farm.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, you know, this is really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So why doesn't somebody think about, you know, even processing on a small scale? Because if you look at tomatoes, well, couldn't you can tomatoes, for example, and have them available?
Well, we've had blight 2 years in a row. So, we've had paste tomatoes out there for tomato juice. 2 years in a row, we've lost it.
Yeah.
But there are many other things. There's certainly all kinds of other.
I'm just thinking about product development and product ideas, and
well,
maybe that's a way.
Well, it would be nice to be able to work with these offices, and we could grow the food, they could work out, you know, and it could start with, you know, the HTM, which is where the watermelon ice cream came from,
yeah.
you know, and it's the grade 4 children that were in this week and last week and are coming in on Thursday to harvest food to take to the kitchen to cook. You know, we're already doing it on a smaller scale. We need the funding to be able to keep it going at a scale that steps up.
I think with the intelligentsia that's here, there's certainly a lot of opportunity for research, I think, and product development,
mm-hmm.
because this
mm-hmm.
is what this university is about,
yeah.
is developing products or the technology
well,
to develop products.
I'm going to give a little plug for farmers research, because so much of the agricultural research comes from the pseudoscience of farmers on the land. We have a research project there, granted pseudo,
right,
but I think that, you know, our work and the, I mean, all the students come to the site with all kinds of ideas and some quite a few graduate students at that, you know, planting certain crops and suggesting this and that, and we've been doing that, you know, looking at foods that are higher in antioxidants. I mean, I'd like to see some recognition for the farmers that are pushing soil health to actually grow really solid, nutrient-dense food that's packed, you know, and I'd like to see the laboratories here start to look at that food and then start to do some comparative checking with the food from the grocery store, the organic food from California, wherever, or local, or the or local conventional food. That's, I think that's a next, one of the next steps in opening people's eyes to the reality that healthy soil, healthy food makes for healthy people. It's just plain and simple. I was listening to CBC coming in this morning, and it's about, you know, it's a woman talking about the Cancer Society, and we raise all this money and the pink flags and all this sort of thing. Well, the pink flags haven't reduced breast cancer one little bit, though they've raised millions and millions of dollars. You know, why aren't we raising awareness to the extent of food? It strikes me as very odd that it's something that is not, it's not really talked about. Small circles that we're in.
Yeah.
Talk about local and sustainable and real
food. And
then
you see some studies or hear of studies that say, well, there's no difference between organic food and conventional food or food that comes in from California.
Well, they can fool us now. They can say that, you know, a BRICS sugar test rating is, it can be the same for both. Well, it can if you add X amount of chemical to the soil. You can end up with the same readings. But the nutrient, the magnesium and the calciums and all of the mineral that's in a food, I can't imagine, because I don't think the work's being done. Maybe it is. I don't know. I haven't seen it.
Certainly the taste is something that when I bought produce from the farm and then you utilize it that night, you know, when you're making dinner, the taste is, mm-hmm. you can't compare it to something you buy in the store.
Yeah.
It's like going to the farmer's market, the same thing. When you use something that's been picked, you know, within a day of you consuming it, there's no difference between something that's been with that and something that's spent 2 weeks, you know, either in storage or transit. I think that even that is an argument in and of itself.
Absolutely.
From a purely self-interest standpoint.
You're listening to CFRU 93.3. FM.
The C.J. Monfort Center is a resource center for people of color and Aboriginal peoples at the University of Guelph. This is where we all unite. The Monfort Center, located in McKinnon Room 54 and 55, provides a microwave, two computers, and a fridge, among other resources. The center is a place to study, sleep, or relax. It's a place for great conversation. If you want to vent, share experience, good or bad, this is the place for you. You meet great people, and it's just an overall awesome environment. Don't hesitate to drop in anytime before 10 p.m., and you're sure to meet a smiling face. For more information, call us at 519-824-4120, extension 56911, or visit us at www.uoguelph.ca/Monfort or join our Facebook group.
The following is brought to you by Echo Weekly. I'm publisher Sean Rosen, and I've been asked to record a radio spot and talk to you about why you should read Echo Weekly. So, do yourself a favor. Pick up a copy of Echo Weekly, check it out. And if you don't, ask yourself why. Because as a person, you might be lacking. Thank you. Echo Weekly, free every Thursday.
Immigrant Services Guelph, Wellington offer free settlement and adoption services for a new immigrant to Canada. We are committed to providing programs and services that ease the transition that immigrants face as they settle into their new home. Clients are assisted through confidential and culturally sensitive counseling. We offer free settlement services in the following languages: Arabic, Cantonese, Mandarin, Dari, Hungarian, English, Farsi, French, Pashto, Serbian, Spanish, Urdu, Hindi, Punjabi, and Vietnamese. You can contact Immigrant Services, Guelph Wellington, for more information about our free settlement services as well as all our other programs at 519-836-2222. That's 519-836-2222. Drop by and see us at 926 Paisley Road. You can also visit us our website www.is-gw.ca. Thank you.